Oh, good. We'll start now, and good evening. This is Wednesday night, and it's the Joy of Sacrifice. In the last several weeks, it's actually almost 2 or 3 months now, Ivan.
The last several weeks have been 2 or 3 months?
Especially last week.
Oh, okay.
Which is about 2 months long for
right.
me.
Last 10 weeks.
But we've been working our way through a book called The Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold. What we're doing is we're working together as a group. We're working together as a group to digest material that is important to all of us. And the material is multifaceted. The more work and the more attention we put on it, it will come to life. And I guarantee that that is a formula throughout. If you're able to put your attention on something for a while, it will cleanse it. It will actually cleanse it. And it isn't, the theory at this point is interesting. The theory is important. The theory is like a guide for me, Ivan. The theory provides
right.
like a just a general direction. But the genius is in implementation. The genius is in how do we apply this material. Now, I'm not sure if anybody got the email I sent out, but what I indicated is that I think it's important for us to spend another week or so on that sacrifice number 9. Sacrifice number 9, and it actually starts on page 205 of the book, is the sacrifice of sanity. And the subtitle is The Life of Essence. And we started working our way through that last week, and I strongly suggest there were some really strong posts that we talked about that Arya put up and that Jana put up. And then during the last few days, you might have seen a poem posted by Ivan. If you read the poem and spend some time with it, you'll see how, in a certain way, it's directly related to this particular sacrifice. We're all down the path quite a way. We're not really beginners here. And most of the people that come to this school and the schools that we've been associated with, we're not beginners. We're not total neophytes on the path. We're down the road a bit. And we gather together in order to hone our tools. We all have some toolkits. And it's now time. We're working together as senior players within this game to enhance our skill sets. Okay? Now, let's go over the critical parts of what this particular sacrifice is and just reorient ourselves to it. And then I want to read something and then open the discussion back up again. So this is from the chapter. Now, one goes to the door of the corridor of madness. What is madness? It is the undeveloped essence forcefully exploded into the active role of controlling the organism, which up to then had been under the command of the psyche. That sums that up for me. Do you want to say something about that, Ivan, or?
Well, I don't know what to say about it. It sounds like serious business.
Well, it is serious business.
I think that something in view of, let's say, the reading that we've done or the work that we've been doing along the lines that EJ lays down, what he recommends, I think it might be worth talking about this idea that the, seems to me, the essence itself in a certain way is unperturbed. I mean, the essence being, our essential self, doesn't really have any problem with madness. doesn't have any problem with control or not control. It doesn't have any problem with any of those barriers, the issues, and so on. It's, you know, because the essence is not social. You know, the essence is not personality. It's not machine. And it's not a social entity, and so on.
Correct.
So I guess I feel a little uneasy with. I feel like we haven't necessarily addressed what the struggle is. You know, I don't know if we need, if we can, it may not be possible to specify that.
It is possible. It is possible,
yeah.
And that's what the heart of this chapter is about, is that conflict. And that's why, if we read Arya's comments and Molly and Jana's expansion of it, we understand they're precisely bang on. It's, we're handing the baton off to a different paradigm at this point. We're literally saying that we're going to stand in new ground. Now,
so wait, so isn't it madness because we're shattering the control of the psyche?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's who's in control.
Madness.
That has to do with the madness.
Madness compared to what? Okay?
That's what I always say.
Madness compared to what? I mean, when you're in the, it's the transit. I've been saying this for 2 years now. It's the transit that is the issue here. What do I mean by transit? Transit means moving from one space into a different space. As we are conscious of that transit, something different happens. As we're conscious of it, then we can, I call it acquiesce or surrender. We surrender in a certain way to the change that's occurring because we know we're moving from the machine-dominated world into the world where the essence is suddenly at home again. It says, this is my home, and it knows it. And we know that that's the case. And that's where we're moving from. Now, bought a book. And Silverdale, it's an oldie but goodie. It's called The Mark by Maurice Nicole. And you can, there are all kinds of judgments about it, and I don't wish to enter into that particular conversation. The reason I brought it was just to discuss one particular parable that he works with.
Are these the New Testament parables?
Yeah. Yeah, he's working with some of the New Testament parables. And there's one in particular that caught my imagination many, many, many years ago when I bought this and stayed with me when I was considering this chapter over the last few days. And it's the parable of the sower. And here Christ comes before the multitudes, and as they say, he was standing on a boat, and he begins to discuss the parable. And what's the parable? He says, well, the farmer goes to sow his seeds, right? Sow the seeds, place the seeds. And some of them fell on the shore in the rocks and were eaten by the birds, and others fell on
fertile ground.
They fell on fertile ground. So, and this is the heart of what we're talking about now. This is the heart of this, where this transition that we're at. And it's important to try for each of us to understand when you are standing on fertile ground. I forgot to look up the quote in the Old Testament where the archangel says to the prophet, loose your shoes because you stand on holy ground. Now, the holy ground is not created by a physical location, and most importantly, it's not created by others. Others create it. You might be able to notice it that others have created, but it is made manifest by our own efforts and by our own change of consciousness. And it's that work that we're asked to do and to come forth with in this chapter. We're asked to create and stand on new ground. That's the corridor of madness, or the beginnings of it, Ivan, is that we're going to change drivers here. I actually have done this, where you're in a car and you're going to change drivers. I don't know if anybody does it anymore, but I've actually done that in the past, where somebody's driving and you grab the wheel and then they shift and suddenly there's a new driver there. There's the moment of that transition where it's utterly frightening because there's so many things that can happen. But when you do it, suddenly you're in a different foundation at that point. And by the way, I firmly suggest you never do that. Don't try that ever.
Pulling over, yeah. I'm more familiar with the one where you stop the car and you open the front doors and everybody runs around hysterically and then changes drivers.
That's how some people do it.
And you continue driving.
That's how some people do it, and other people do it otherwise. So we're talking about changing drivers here. And that's the critical element. And that's what, for instance, Arya talked about. And that's what's indicated here in the parable of the that is being spoken of by Christ in the New Testament.
The seed.
Now, what are those seeds, and what is the fertile ground? The fertile ground is the essential self. And the seeds are the higher ideas that come from the higher. And the higher ideas can only take ground in the essential self. In essence, these seeds cannot flourish in any way, shape, or form in the mental centrum of the machine. Make sense? Of course it does. Now, here's a critic. Then this is the part two. And Simon, are you there on the phone?
Calling Simon.
Simon, if you're on the phone, just.
Yes, I am here, David.
Okay. If somebody has a comment, it's important that you check in and read it, okay?
Okay. I got a comment from Biff. It says, an essence exploded into command of the trajectory of the self, like a baby, without the first idea of what to do to make a single move.
And that's bang on. So that's exactly right what Piff is saying to us. It's suddenly we're allowing a new driver to come forth. Now, the new driver is not necessarily schooled in how to drive this particular machine. It's brand new to it. Now, it's complicated by the problem that, in a certain way, it doesn't care either.
That's what I was wondering about.
When we say it doesn't care, we're talking about values and concerns that are born of the machine. They're born from the machine, and from the machine it's all of the elements that we're talking about in regular life. We're not talking about this new life and the new person that is being born here. We're giving wings to the essence. We're giving wings to it by allowing and setting the machine aside. It's not impossible to do, but it also doesn't happen mechanically. It's not like a flip of the switch. I happen to know that there's several people where for short periods of time in their life, the switch did flip. It was all on essential self. I don't know if you've ever known anybody that went into that, but it sometimes just happens. Then I'm going to use an interesting word, and it's actually a good example. They have no control at that point. Okay? They have no control. Something else is compelling and working through that individual. At that moment, the individual is operating, we'll call it the bardos for the moment. Now, the bardos, as we know, is a technical term that comes out of the whole Tibetan tradition and the idea of the bardo sodal and so on, from the moment of death to the moment of rebirth, the 49-day cycle. And I'm not specifically talking about there. I'm talking about living in the bardo world now. And that world, its compass is defined. Its compass is defined by the essential self. And the essential self's yearning. Remember we talked about this idea of yearning?
Right.
And the idea of yearning for the absolute. So we have to give it its wings so that its yearnings can be exercised. And we can do that. Now, so for some people, it happened kind of by accident. I personally don't think it's by accident. I know two people specifically that went through this. It happened kind of by accident, but if we examine what occurred, there was a lot of pre-effort. And sometimes it does happen, so to speak, by accident, but there was a lot of momentum built up by those individuals, very, very diligent workers. And boom, then they were there. They got what they asked for, but they didn't quite know what they were asking for. You know that one? Yeah.
Hey, David, can I make a chauvinistic joke here? This material is really, of course, the follow-on to the human biological machine in which the primary efforts are to awaken the machine. And of course, one of the chapters is bringing the woman to life, in which it's explained that as our essence or that ethereal part of ourselves begins to awaken, it awakens the machine, and then that's maybe like, while you bring a woman to life, you could lose your sanity.
That's exactly what we're talking about. And if we take it out of the just simple mundane world, like I just got back from New York. I got back late last night. And so during the day of traveling, well, I'm on the plane, right? And sitting next to my daughter and next to her was this other fellow. And we're on the plane for a few hours. And I was quite irritated at his personal habits. Had some habits, and I just wanted to, like, punch him in the face. I figured that was the solution. But I was quite lucky, because I was there, I was stuck there for several hours. I had no choice, and I somehow kind of instinctively knew that I wasn't going to punch him in the face. But just suddenly, I got into it, and I go, what is another way of looking at this? What's going on here? And I settled into something, and the machine kind of dissipated its intense will of wanting to be right and backed away a little bit, and it's just suddenly I saw that this is another person there, this actual human being with a psyche, an essential self, trying as it would to do whatever it's going to do. And it changed. So at that moment, I caught the scent of the essential self, and that's what I'm talking about. So if we're not in a position where this switch just flips and suddenly you're there. But here's the hard part, Ivan, and here's the part that is difficult, and this is the part that's called work, okay? And this, because I guarantee you, everybody that's, I don't know who all that's online right now, but most of the people that are there have moments of sniffing the essential self all day long. It comes in and out. My position is focus on those moments when it comes in. Focus on it.
Right.
And give it its territory. And when you do that, you start to build the momentum. You start to build the momentum. And we understand and we remember that what we're trying to sniff out there is the vibratory sense. And I think that's the term that you've used at times, Silverdale, the vibratory sensation of what the essential self is like. Okay? There you have it.
So is that an antidote to madness?
It is an antidote to madness. Well, it very much is.
Maybe.
Well, swing away.
Well, I think maybe people can weigh in on that. I have a question for people out there. You're reading that parable of the sower. What reading this sacrifices reminded me of is this Sufi story, I believe, or maybe it's across traditions, about the four monks or four Sufis or four initiates who go into the garden, which is something like the Garden of Paradise, or just defined as the Garden of Chaos, the Garden of outside of ordinary life, and then only one emerged. You know, that one is lost, one is never found or heard from again. You know, one comes out, permanently mad. Another one is, I think, reduced to like an infant, unable to function. And one out of the four comes out enlightened, or let's say, sound or whole. I wonder if anybody out there knows that story, because I can't remember the details of it. But that seems to me to be...
You got the heart of it, though.
Be relating.
Yeah.
Addressing this idea of the obstacles and about the risk of the changeover to the essence life. You know, it suggests that there's a toll.
There is a toll. There is a toll.
There's a body count.
And we're going to get into that in the second half, but there is definitely a toll.
Yeah.
Simon, is there something else that needs to be read?
David, I just passed the, I continue, but I don't seem to follow well the comments that they are doing. I don't know what it is really. I told Molly if she wants to pick something to tell you that she will be beside that.
Thank you.
There is a whole dialogue there that I don't seem to follow well.
Okay, the parable is the parable of the sower. It's in the New Testament. It's in each of the three fundamental gospels. It's not in John, but it's in the Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And let's see, page 208. I'm just trying to get the exact for you. The exact where it is in the
actually a King James version of it?
I don't. I have
the interpretation.
I should have brought my Bible.
Well, what does Nicole say about this, just out of curiosity?
Well,
should we be interested in that? Or?
Well, I don't want to get into it too much. And the reason is because he, of course, then goes into all the stuff about, he brings in a lot of the good Jeffian material,
mm-hmm.
which is good, but we're not focusing on that.
Right.
Let's see, let me just bring in some of it. Behold, the sower went forth to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and birds came and devoured them. Hear ye then the parable of the sower. When any one heareth the word of the kingdom, and understandeth it not, then cometh the evil one, and snatches away that which hath been sown in his heart. This is he that was sown by the wayside. Matthew 13:18-19. And so what he's saying there is that we are in a position, and it's all about the fertile ground, and the fertile ground is the essential self, and it's finding that place in yourself so that you are in the fertile ground. And the seeds are the hints that we get, and we'll get them all day long. We'll get them, we'll have signs. It's, do we have eyes to see those signs? The answer is yes, we do, but our vision isn't very good yet. So we have to keep practicing it. Okay?
Yeah, he who has ears, let him hear. But that also said that the actual biblical passage also suggested that if you're, let's say, if you're on this path, if you are presented, let's say, with that initiation, if you're presented with the seeds, you're presented with whatever it is that's vital, that's viable to grow into something, if you reject that, if you cannot hear, if you don't, you're not fertile ground, it doesn't just not grow, then it's like, then it's what you have is taken away from you.
Let me expand on that point.
You know, there's a falling back, which I think that EJ has also touched on in several of these sacrifices.
If we're given, for instance, we're given this essential material in these chapters, in these sacrifices, if they fall on the ground of the machine and the linear thinking, they will be, I say, they'll be hijacked. They'll be what do you call when you get like
co-opted?
They'll be co-opted by the machine.
That's what we said in the '60s about.
They'll be co-opted. They'll be what is it when a sailor gets kidnapped to go?
Oh yeah, pressed into service.
No, but when
they call it.
No. Yeah. When they get somebody
that's later on
to get to serve on the boat by just.
No, they just kidnap people, and once they get you on the ship,
Shanghai.
Yeah, you're now under the control of the captain on the.
So these ideas are just simple ideas. If they're shanghaied or harvested by the machine, it will build the ego as if it's like, as they say, the evil one.
Yeah, really.
And it's
that
only
evil, one
evil
is in there somewhere.
It's only evil in relation to something else. And that's the next point I want to get into now. It's only evil when you begin to sense a direction for yourself. And when we begin to sense that direction for ourselves, then there is something to measure it against. If not, who cares in a sense, right? Who cares?
Who cares what you do or
yeah.
how you behave?
Yeah, who cares? Why would it matter? But if you're focusing toward the life of the essential self, then there's something to measure. And thus we come forth to starting to be on the path, and that path is, as Pitt said, it's the opening of this madness but it's madness in relation to the machine. Let me read another quote.
Okay.
From someone totally different, okay? Until one is committed, there is hesitancy. The chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitively commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, rising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. And that has happened certainly to me.
Who says
that is by someone named William H. Murray And it's his book, The Scottish Himalayan Expedition. The point is that when you have a start of a sense of commitment for, and you know, we make it, all I mean by that is that you begin to vote in favor of the essential self. And that, as you start to do that, then the way starts to become formed. And we start to understand the way. And the way starts to gain momentum in us. So Molly, what else do you want to...
I don't think there is much, David. There's been just comments around, but nothing specifically.
Wait a minute.
Jan's reading us a comment, but I'm not getting it.
I didn't hear you. Yeah, can you read it again?
Let's hear that again.
We remember the word. So Pip is telling us that even those who have, if by accident this switch gets flipped and you're suddenly there and you have no tools whatsoever, that does not guarantee the next steps for you. All of it comes back to fundamental work on a day-to-day basis. What it leaves for you, I know this, and I verified this with other workers, it leaves an exact place for you to go to and for your sensing to move into and say, ah, that is what it's like. So you have an exact sense of what it means to be in the essential self. And during the day, this is going to happen. It's so unusual that if you allow that world exists, it's just like suddenly everything's different around you. Hints will come to you in the strangest moments, and you'll think someone's talking a different language. I call it angel talk, that you suddenly hear a phrase and you go, your head just goes clunk, if you're open to it.
Yeah, that would be coincidence control also.
There we go.
This other passage that you read was suggesting that we have, by an exercise of will or by summoning the presence of the essential self, but as a result of the invocation of presence, let's say, you may be able to experience coincidence control working in your favor, like supporting what you're doing. I was reminded of something else from the work with the human biological machine that also saying, you know, okay, the accident is going to happen, but what is the preparation? What is it that you can do to be the fertile ground? Well, for the awakened state of the machine, what is necessary is the absence of the negative manifestations, right? The absence of the with negative emotions, you know, the absence of those electrical vibrations and so on that are solely the machine.
What is the crowning
so
glory?
This would be, you know, if you're mired in some kind of emotional anxiety or fear or frustration or joy for that matter, whatever, this other stream is not necessarily going to take you anywhere.
You won't be able to hear.
You're not going to be paying attention to
you.
You're not actually going to be.
Your sensing mechanism isn't alive to be cognizant of it.
Because all this, the outer has to be quiet. It's like the outer is supposed to be passive.
Okay. Listen to
what Ivan is saying.
This is the critical element of the next phase here that we're about to go into. Now, for instance, let's say that we said, here's the form of behavior that somebody on the path should follow. Okay? We just have a list of what the right behaviors are. You eat certain foods, you eat in a certain manner, you dress in a certain way. And let's say that you start to follow that. Does that make you a worker on the path? Somebody in our vast audience here said, not necessarily. Why not? I asked him. So the why is, if it's dogmatic, if it's purely dogmatic, then you're just following another form of the outer. You're just saying, oh, gosh, the teacher said I should do this, therefore I'm doing it. That's nothing. It's nothing unless you have some sense of it from the inner. Now, in a super broad sense, following what the teacher may say to you directly, that's a different story. But if all you're doing is following it totally dogmatically, it's just another form of the ego. The crowning glory of the machine is the ego. The ego wears this giant crown of creation. It is the foundation of all. It is almost infinite. It is remarkably creative. But its realm is the realm of the world. And we're talking of being in the realm of the other. And we're talking about being in the realm of the essential self. So we can get there. We can sneak our way into heaven. Okay? But here's how you do it. What you do is a little bit at a time, but you have to be aware. Your sensing mechanism has to be sensitive enough. Does that point make sense to everybody, the sensing mechanism? Do you know what I mean by that? Molly says yes. Matt says yes.
Well, sensing apparatus or sensing, yes. I think I know of the sensing, yeah.
Ivan says he's heard the word before.
I think sensing is sensing.
Sensing is as fundamental to me as breathing. It's how my eyes work. My eyes, which at this age are starting to fail slightly, work not as well as my sensing mechanism. I literally watch by my sensing mechanism. And I see things sometimes that surprise me in places I wouldn't expect to see them. So that's probably, in my opinion, the most important tool to develop. Now, how do you do what Ivan's saying is to, so that the external manifestations aren't there? One thing you can do is just be in ignorance. Being not knowing, being, I don't know what's going on around me, because you don't. It's frightening, for instance, traveling, because there are so many variables that can go wrong. So many. As well as you plan, and if you surrender to that, then so be it. Okay? So, what else?
David.
Yes, sir.
Piangio says, David means by sensing mechanism the same thing that Buddhists mean by discernment.
Yes. Fundamental.
That's right?
Actually, right on. And by discernment and sensing, what we mean is we see this in the Christian mystic literature, we're taking the sword of discernment and we're cutting the dross away. And we're saying, that's the world of the machine. That's the world that belongs to the earth. And so we start to begin to understand the phrase that we are in the world, but we're not of it. We are not born of the world. We're born of the essential self.
I seems to me sensing is more of something like intuition. I'm not sure about discernment. Discernment might be part of it, but sensing is where you know something not by thinking it. You know something, it's not what you feel. It's not your emotional feeling.
Right.
Sensing is it's a bodily knowledge, body knowledge. I'm not sure if that's discernment.
Well, I think it's discernment in a higher sense of discernment, not a mental discernment, as we might say in a mental argument. But it's a discernment that where you sense the mood is fundamentally different from one position to another. And it's that kind of discernment that, and we talked, I think it was a few weeks ago, or maybe it was in HPM, about this idea of navigating by mood. Do you remember this?
Yeah, right.
And that's the mood I mean. It's the mood of sensing and the joy of being in the essential self. And you'll have joy when you're there. Yes.
Sorry. Bath World says, it is like when I just know something.
Yep.
It's when you just know something. And Malliam says in the same line, sensing with the third eye, perhaps?
Sure.
Maybe sensing with the third eye. See, I'm thinking of, concretely, in doing the movements, it's sensing that tells you when you've hit the position, when you've
right.
hit the posture. Because it's not... You don't do it in front of the mirror. You don't have, you know, actually, there's a matter of instruction. You know, I'm not a movement instructor, but my understanding is there's a matter of instruction with the movements where you never do any serious correction of anybody. You have them model, Tabitha shows you the posture, and you go into that posture, and then basically the instructor says, okay, let's try it again. Do it, repeat it 10 times, repeat it 100 times, or whatever. It's the sensing, there's actually a sensation that you will feel, let's say when you come to do a series of those postures, you'll actually feel when you hit the mark point, and then there's a transition, the posture itself is just a mark point in a fluid, in a process of movement. And, there are transitions between the postures. So, but there's a, I don't know how to describe it. It actually is like a click, it seems to be.
You know you're in the groove. You're in the groove.
It is a sensation. It actually is literally the sensation that you're in, posture, 1-7. That's it. And guess what? Does it look the same? It doesn't even look the same because there are different body types. Somebody's tall and thin, somebody's shorter and stockier, and somebody has bigger legs and longer arms. But there is a moment. There's a shape. I'm trying to think of what that is. There's a shape in the air. There's a shape in time. That posture represents is it a corresponding or something, and so you actually sense. How are you going to know when you hit that corresponding? That is a sensation. That is something you actually sense.
Okay, that's a moment of certitude. It comes from a different place. Back to our old philosopher Spinoza, he said that when you hit, you're certain that you're certain. He says. You don't need an external measure of that. You know that you're in that form of certainty at that point. There's nothing more needed. There's not an external needed. We used to do early on we did the Afghani rhythmics and the arm movement, and then the arm movements with the feet.
Right.
From a mental point of view and a machine point of view, it's very hard to do. You can do it that way because I've seen it done that way. But after we did it for a while, you could just feel yourself drop into that. And you drop into that, and suddenly the arms are moving just right, and the feet, the pattern is moving just exactly right, and you know exactly what that time. You know it through sensing. Now, I don't want to make it esoteric. Oh my gosh, doing these complex movements, wow. It took years to, I'm saying in each and everybody's life every day, you're having sensing opportunities. And what I'm saying is to focus, accept, and acknowledge those moments. That's the work that is called forth in this particular sacrifice.
Well, David, this is interesting. I think we're really getting at something now. I mean, I don't think it's esoteric at all. But there's a bunch of things that are esoteric, like philosophically and mentally speaking, like this is very esoteric. But guess what? I mean, you're just talking about the thing where, you know, I could remember coming across this in a human biological machine or somewhere that or maybe it was in doing the movement that. Oh, you have to just, it's very simple. You have to switch the roof brain and the tail brain, you know, and swap them around so that they're,
yeah.
You know, they're in each other's place. Like, what the hell does that mean? Well, I mean, you're, this is exactly what you just, elucidated is that the roof brain, you know, the thing that works for algebra and rudimentary calculus or whatever, you got to in, as a senior in high school, you know, is not going to get you through this Afghani rhythmics and all this. You have to get it into the body, into the moving centrum. And that is to say, it's going to feel different. You're going to have a sensation that's different when your tail brain is doing it, and when the reflex, the moving centrum, is doing the movements.
Okay, so that's a...
And it's not... It's a... Again, I think it's a small debt of the ego. It's like saying the psyche is not going to run these movements. The body is going to run these movements.
Beautiful.
That's at least a step towards the essential self is getting to do movements.
So
okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to equate the description that we are having of all these states to the description that EJ says in the book. It says, to make this sacrifice, one simply becomes like a bubbling idiot, dressing and behaving so stupidly that forgets his own grandmother. So that's my question. And at the same time, it says we must meet that moment in which we start creating this psychic that, because we couldn't cope with life, we start developing these tools that today would be personality. But he says the great betrayal, the moment at which the child decided that life was so complex to meet with the simple essence. So we have to meet face to face with that. So I have those two questions. What do you say about that phrase? And in the beginning of the page, the first paragraph, which is, we have to be like a bubbling idiot.
So now we're
giving
Simon just jumped us, to
sacrifice pen, which is fine, because I was going to allude to that, but... And when you are really, truly standing in that position in a certain way, you don't know who the mother is. You don't know who the person that you're looking at, you don't know who they are exactly. But you do know that they are another essential self standing there. You do sense that. And the key is that when you move into more the world of the essential self, is not to react, not to go into the reactive brain that just has to be right all the time and know the answer to everything all the time. You have to allow yourself to be ignorant, in ignorance. I've told a story when I was working with the Spinoza Gurdjieff group and Gregory Grover, the teacher. I had had this experience and I said, gosh, I just saw inside, and I just looked like there was nothing there, and I was really quite empty. And he looked at me, and he said, "Yeah, that sounds about right." You know, I was empty. I am. There's not much there. And allow ourselves to be in those moments, and allow yourself, therefore, to be a babbling idiot. Now, if you practice that at your workplace,
definitely,
you will have a response
definitely.
From the world. The world will say, "Out, get away."
Sure.
But the key is if you practice this enough and you are in that space, you will be able to, if you have that sensing mechanism working, there will be times when you'll see things that no one else will see, and you'll know a direction that no one else knows. I've had that too. So let's see about babbling idiots.
Are you going to move on to the Timothy Leary chapter?
His head's blown.
The
Great Betrayal, the moment at which the child decided that life was too complex to meet with the simple essence and allowed outside influence to form a psyche. Okay, we've heard Silverdale talk about this immense, you know, great detail, where the essential self, the child in we've all, several of us have had children and have had home births who have been able to directly observe the giant size of the essential self of the birthing moment.
Mm-hmm.
How large the child is, essentially, physically small. And the child lives in that manner for a while. At a certain point then, the child says, "Forget this noise. I'm going to just copy what everybody else is doing and be a machine." But it remembers there's a nostalgia for that innocence. And the innocence is that innocence of the essential self. And it can and does come back to it. Our work is to recraft the path back into that essential self. Recognize the great betrayal. We took that choice. We made that choice. And we did it for good reason. And thank God, I'm very thankful for the machine that it's here. I'm alive. I'm still functioning. I have a great gratitude for that, because it's allowed me to do my work. And I'm very pleased at that. That's a good thing. So it did its job. I just have to remind it that some of its functioning is no longer required. Easier said than done. Does that help a little bit, Simon?
Yes, David, yes, thank you.
We're having these moments all day long, and all I'm saying is let's harvest those moments, not for the machine, but for the essential self. Point to them when it occurs. It's something that you can't make mechanical.
You can't make mechanical?
You can't. Because if you attempt to make it, then it just disappears. Like catching something with your peripheral vision, if you turn to it, suddenly it's disappeared. You know it's been there, like that whole thing with the corks and how they recognize that they can't look at it directly, but they know it was there, like the Wilson cloud chamber when it passes through, that they knew that its trail was there. We're chasing the invisible. We're chasing the invisible because that's our life. That's where we're meant to live. Let's go live there. Let's go live there.
If I may share, David and Ivan and the crowd, I don't know if I have been exactly like you are describing, but I have been in moments in which, with people, in which I have allowed the, I believe it's my essential self, just to witness that, exactly like you say, I really don't know the person on the front. I mean, just staying there, witnessing this, trying to find that essential self in that person too. And my tendency is with, let's say, with the freshness of that consciousness that I reach in that moment, I tend to stay in silence, you know.
Yeah.
Just sitting there in silence, just looking at the person from a different point of view, and I just don't do very much.
Well, that's an example of sitting in this babbling sense. From one point of view, we can say, oh, it's just babbling. But that's the point of view of the machine. From the other point of view, the essential self is okay with just being there, just being in presence. There's nothing else to do but be in presence then. Gradually, we learn to function even in the space of the mechanic of the essential self. We learn to function there too. But the driver is no longer the ego or the machine, but the driver is the essential self. That's where we're headed, that's where we're going, and that's where more and more of the people that are here, that's where they're headed as well. So when those moments occur, don't give them up. Allow them to be there. Allow yourself to be, so to speak, a babbling idiot. But a lot of us, I think, practice that on a daily basis. Do a good job of it, too. They don't tend to move on, however. That's another challenge.
I don't know. David is exercising his discernment on us all of a sudden. Chapter 9.
We can. And if you want, we can. This is I consider Sacrifice 9 to be the fundamental turning point. It's actually saying to us, let's live a new life. And that's, that is
serious.
It's very serious.
Serious business.
We're pretty much out of time, but I'm happy to support that. If people want to email me, we can talk about it, or post more on the website and begin a dialogue about it.
Is this the group where you get the circle of folding chairs and you put them out in the corridor of madness, and that's pretty neat.
We'll meet
maybe
in the corridor of madness.
Yeah. You like the dream assembly, you know.
It's an interesting thing. There's a particular singer, she's actually German, her name is Deva Pramal, but she sings like Indian chants and things like that. Remarkable voice. I was listening to one excerpt from a concert of hers, and you know, she'll do a chant, and it goes on for like 10 minutes or something. At the end of it, everybody claps, you know, because it's so wonderful, and they're exalted. At the end of this concert, she said, just with a very flat look, she looks at the audience, she says, this is not about clapping. So she said, don't clap at the end of this one. Just be in silence with it. It's hard to do that, because you get lifted up and you're sitting in the essential self, and the machine is so frightened by that, by being in that moment of corridor of madness, in that chaotic place, that it wants to go down again and reassert itself. So you clap to get rid of the energy. You banish it. But stay in that energy. Stay with that. And stay with that fear for a moment longer. And a moment longer, until it's okay to be there. Okay? That's all I have for tonight. So, thanks for coming. We'll be back next Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and we'll proceed.
David, that's coming.
Yes.
They say that we should have a group reunion just for Chapter 9. They said, let's do it again, Chapter 9.
Let's do it again. And let's see what winds up on the website, and we'll take our next steps at that point.
Okay.
Thanks. Look
Thank
forward
you very
to
much. Good to see you guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you.